Well, good evening. Hopefully no injuries yet, but Henry will have a little clinic after if you need a little sports clinic, any injuries. Because I only do hands, so I'm sure most of you didn't injure your hand today. Any basketball fans? My mentor took care of the small finger PIP joint. Now, he took care of it in a delayed fashion. Someone treated Larry Bird. You see his small fingers bent and crooked early on, and they didn't do a good job. And then he ultimately helped fix it up a little bit. And Larry Bird ultimately gave him a bronze basketball with his hand just like that on it. So it's pretty cool in his office. But my goal is that we all can not prevent this from happening, okay? And I would say, you know, for the most part, I suspect you all treat a lot of these injuries acutely more than I do, but I certainly see them all in the office, and it's interesting how they're treated and what they're told, and so hopefully we'll be on the same page after this. So our lineup, we're going to talk about PIP joint injuries, anatomy dislocations, fracture dislocations, more complicated, MP joint dislocations and ligament injuries, finger injuries, including fractures, mallet fingers, and DIP dislocations. So here's the anatomy. This is basically the same anatomy for all your finger joints. Every finger joint looks like this. Now, I particularly have this one for the PIP joint, but the same can be said for all of them. It's a little different for the MP joint because, you know, the MP joint kind of goes, you can go sideways, you know, you could do, you know, nano-nano sort of thing, but you can't do that with your PIP joint, DIP joint. They're just a hinge joint. But they still have the same collateral ligament anatomy. It's just the collateral ligaments are a little more lax than the MP joint. But and that does have certain implications we'll talk about. So just to kind of review, there's a couple different tendons actually attach at the PIP joint, the dorsum, right here. But essentially there's a central tendon that extends your finger at the PIP joint, a flexor tendon that flexes it, and then it's the collateral ligament anatomy that really you should try to understand so that when you look at these x-rays, you have a better understanding of what's stable and what's unstable and why we should treat certain things in certain different positions. And so for the main thing to understand is that there's what's called the proper collateral ligaments, and that's the more dorsal side of this. So they all have the same origin, and this attaches at the base of the middle phalanx. So on the left would be your proximal phalanx, on the your right is the middle phalanx, and then so you have the proper collateral ligament, and then you have this accessory collateral ligament that has the same origin, but it attaches to what's called the volar plate. And the volar plate is like the keystone to all your joints. Every one of your joints has a volar plate in it, and generally how that's injured and how the bones related to the volar plate are involved will dictate the stability and what your treatment should be. So here's just a different picture. This is where the proximal phalanx is taken away, and you could see the volar plate in red, and then you have this proper collateral ligament, accessory collateral ligament, and this volar plate, and it makes for a very stable joint, and that's why your PIP joint is very stable. It's just a hinge joint, goes from 0 to 120. So I do want to make a couple comments about x-rays. You know, it is interesting that we'll often see people treated in the emergency room without an x-ray, and they'll have a reduction done. I don't think it's a great idea to do that, and we'll talk a little bit later about why. But anyone know what this is called? I'd love it if somebody knew the name of this x-ray, if you know, or at least know what I call it. Lawsuit lateral. So, you know, this is what you'd never want to see. Four fingers overlapping. And if your x-ray tech doesn't, I know you're busy, you got an MI in one room, you got crazy stuff going on in the ER, this person can sue you because, you know, they may have something underneath there. You really need, we call this a splay lateral. Or if you're just looking at you want to know what a lateral looks like of your middle finger, order a lateral of your middle finger, you know, or three views of your middle finger. That's what we typically will get. Personally, I think we should always get three views of a finger that is injured, and you'll have the best idea of what's injured. And so you should be able to see a lateral, a good lateral of every finger if you happen to x-ray a hand. And then, you know, this could be under that lawsuit lateral, and this is a bad injury. And it was something similar to this that Larry Bird had. But anyway, one thing you want to be aware of, that this V sign, there should be always a concentric reduction. You see on the DIP joint, the two there's two concentric joint surfaces. They're concentric. Every spot should be concentric. And you can see here, we call this a V sign when there is a not concentric reduction. And so we're always looking for that. And so when you scan an x-ray, if I was only going to get one view, it would be a lateral because I know there's a concentric reduction. But here's a, this is, you know, it's easy to scan this x-ray and kind of see that every joint is concentrically reduced. Now, if you get some obliques, that's not great either, but I just want to kind of pin home, because we'll see later how the lateral matters a lot. So I'm sure you've all seen many of these finger dislocations. This one's pretty obvious. I think everyone knows this is a finger dislocation, and probably pretty easy reduction, right? My opinion would be get an x-ray first, even though you just want to pop that in and then get the x-ray. But this is also a finger dislocation and obviously looks very different for a PIP joint. And so there are two, in terms of pure ligamentous dislocations, there's a type 1 and type 2. The type 1, you know, it looks pretty dramatic, and that one is much easier to reduce than the type 2. All of these should be easily reduced in the ER. These don't have the implications of an MP joint where there's irreducible, whereas the MP joint has the more irreducible, and we'll go through that. But the similar reductions for these, even though they're quite different when you look at the x-ray lateral. So, but here's the anatomy of what's happening here. The extensor and the flexor are intact, and then you have the, there's kind of a split between the proper and the accessory collateral ligament, but in fact, for the majority of these, the proper collateral ligament and the accessory collateral ligaments are intact. It's just kind of split between there. And when you reduce this, it's very stable because these ligaments, for the most part, are intact. Now, that's not true when you have a finger that is, you know, radially deviated or ulnarly deviated and dorsal. Those probably have a collateral ligament also injured, and those are going to be much more unstable, and you have to kind of account for that. But in general, you probably all done more of these than I do at this point, but you know, we do a dorsal to volar translation and then a rotation to reduce this, right? Traction really doesn't do anything. It may even hurt you. It may even convert a type 1 to a type 2. You want to just put your thumb from the, on the top where that red arrow is and translate it and rotate it as you're reducing this. Traction is not the answer here. And then I would definitely get an x-ray after, and we'll talk about some of the fractures that you may better see on the reduction, and that will have an implication of how you splint them. So here's that type 2. This is one, the only difference here is you have to hyperextend it and try to make it into a type 1, and then do the dorsal to volar translation with the rotation to get it reduced. No traction. And then get a post-reduction x-ray. So this is, I don't know, how many people use this in their ER, this splint? Obviously, there's a lot of variations of the aluminum splint, and I think they're great. We use them for a lot of ways, but I would say this is kind of the work of the devil, this one in particular, where it has this this metal piece. Like for a PIP dislocation, they just hurt their PIP joint. The last thing you want to do is put a metal piece right across their PIP joint and then put them in extension, because that's the position they actually came out on. So in fact, this pure dorsal dislocations of the PIP joint, which is your most common PIP joint dislocation, should be put in flexion. But the reality is most, you know, ERs will put almost all finger injuries in extension. And in fact, for the vast majority of PIP injuries, for instance, they should be put in flexion. Now, we'll go through the couple of caveats where they should be put in extension, but any dorsal dislocation, even a fracture dislocation, should be put in flexion with a dorsal block splint. So this is more of a typical splint that I would say. It is something that you can easily fabricate, put it in some flexion, put some tape, and then allow them to immediately move. So we let these pure dislocations immediately move. Now you can put them in a dorsal block splint, but make sure they get into the office within a week if they're not going to move. You probably could even buddy tape this, but typical standard treatment for a PIP dorsal pure ligamentous injury dislocation would be 3 weeks with a dorsal block splint, allowing them to move almost immediately, and then they could do some buddy taping for sport just to prevent another jamming injury that would potentially dislocate it. So getting an x-ray post-reduction, number one, we want to look for that concentric joint reduction. We want to make sure that on every view, there's a concentric reduction of the joint, and we want to look for even subtle fractures of the base of P2, and we'll go through those later, because even little subtle fractures can have a dramatic implication on their redislocation rate and their stability. So how about this? Now, this looks pretty similar, right? It's a PIP joint dislocation. We always talk about whether it's dorsal or volar. It's always the more distal fragment is how we describe it, right? So if the middle phalanx is dorsal to the proximal phalanx, we'd call it a dorsal dislocation. That's the ones we just talked about. But if the middle phalanx is volar to the proximal phalanx, that would be a volar dislocation. These are dramatically different injuries, and they should be handled differently, and even, especially the splinting after. So we're going to talk about the volar dislocations. And this is much less common. I'll see, you know, it's 80% dorsal dislocations to 20% volar dislocations. So when you see this one, you really got to think a little bit more about this one, because this one can easily come back to my office in dislocated. Even though your post-reduction x-ray could have looked perfect, if you didn't treat it right, they're going to still be dislocated when they come back to my office. Then they're thinking, who should they blame, right? They always want to blame somebody. So this one, the significant issue is that it's your central slip, that tendon attachment to the dorsal base of the middle phalanx, is disrupted to allow that volar dislocation. And so this one, every volar dislocation of a PIP joint, every one of them has a central slip disruption. And every one of them is going to go on to likely re-dislocate if you're not treated right, or they'll end up with a boutonniere deformity if they don't, where they have an extensor lag, and they end up with a boutonniere posturing where it's a flexed PIP joint and a hyperextended DIP joint. So this is the one where you want to actually, it's a very unstable situation. This one can come back a week later in my office and be dislocated. This is the one you want to put in extension. But again, this is the rare one. This is, even though you're putting a lot of these finger injuries in extension in the ER, this is the one that really should be in extension. And we actually don't let them move at all for 6 weeks, because we have to let that tendon heal. So this one can be treated non-surgically, even though there's a tendon disruption. But if they go home and they start moving it, if you tell them, oh, we'll take it off 3 times a day, and they don't want to get stiff, this is the one that's going to either redislocate or end up with a boutonniere mismatch of the extensor and flexor mechanism. And it's actually, once you get to a boutonniere position, it's actually a very difficult thing for us to fix. This is a very easy thing to treat non-surgically, acutely, if they're told to keep it in extension 6 weeks, don't move it, and they'll end up normal. Maybe a little stiff for a while, maybe a little therapy after, but they'll end up in a good spot. So in this one, any sort of splint that keeps them in full extension, don't let them take it off for bathing. You should show them after a bath. If it gets wet, they have to take the splint off, dry everything, keep it supported, put the splint back on, and retape it. So this is the one that you really shouldn't be, you really got to be careful about, the volar PIP dislocation. Now, similarly, you can have a fracture associated with it, right? The exact injury, this exact mechanism, the extensor mechanism could have pulled off a piece of the bone with it, and the size of that bony fragment will even impart increased instability. So this one more likely will need surgery, especially if there's a larger fragment or if it's significantly displaced. So we may more commonly fix that fragment, and it allows us to get them moving sooner also. So this is the one where, you see this x-ray and you say, well, the AP on the right, it looks a little funny on that ring finger, but it may be just because the finger is not fully straight, right? The x-ray technician, the patient didn't want to straighten it because it hurt, it was swollen. And then the lateral doesn't look too bad, but it certainly doesn't look normal, right? And what you really want to realize is that there's not two concentric circles here. You got a bigger space on the volar side and a narrower space on the dorsal side. And so this is actually a rotatory subluxation where the fingers jammed, a collateral ligament ruptures, and the head, here's a picture of it, I don't know if you can see this, but this is the head of the proximal phalanx gets kind of pushed through the extensor mechanism because the collateral ligament's disrupted, and it's not reduced. This can be reduced in the ER. You just have to, it's kind of, since it's a rotational thing, you look at the finger, it looks a little off, you have to rotate it, the opposite, and then put it into extension and reduce it. So this is also likely you put this into extension to fix this. But my main goal for you is to see that even these subtle x-rays, that's why you really need good x-rays, and don't be afraid to send them back to your radiology tech if they don't give you good x-rays, because even these subtle things can have significant ramifications. This was actually one of our Pitt football players, but so anyway, So let's just go through a jam finger. Right? That's the most common thing. It's probably the bane of your existence. You're like, the last thing you want to see is another jam finger. But you know, anytime you see bruising, swelling, ecchymosis, and it's been, last couple hours was the injury, there's probably a decent injury that occurred to that finger, right? Especially bruising. Bruising is blood. Something ruptured or something's fractured, right? So the differential diagnosis of a jammed finger when you see bruising is it's either going to be a ligament tear or partial tear, or it's going to be a fracture, right? So we need an x-ray to know that, and these are the different structures we went over that can be injured. Primarily, the most common thing that's ruptured is that volar plate we talked about in red there. When a finger's jammed, the finger tries to hyperextend, and the volar plate is the strongest ligament, and some amount of that ligament is giving, and the x-ray will rule out whether it pulled a piece of bone or whether there was a fracture associated with that ligament injury. So this can be that finger, or we'll go through more dramatic ones, but you can see here a very subtle little volar plate avulsion fracture, we call that, right? You see a little fracture, that's the volar plate pulls on that piece of bone as the joint was trying to dislocate. There wasn't enough force imparted to the joint, so it didn't actually dislocate, but it pulled this little piece of bone off with that volar plate, and this is a very stable injury. The problem with this one often is that they come to the ER, sometimes you didn't see anything, and then the radiologist calls you and say there was a fracture, then you call the patient, oh, there was a fracture, you got a splinter for 2 weeks, and then if it still hurts, go see someone. The reality is this one is probably the most common thing you guys see, and it's a little nothing, and I see this 4 months later because they never saw anybody. They didn't move it, they thought they were told it was a fracture, they splint it for too long, and then they get really stiff. And then 4 months later, they're still complaining of stiffness. So this is actually one that you should move them immediately, and you don't even need to put them in a splint, even though your radiologist called you and said there's a fracture of the finger. This little fleck of bone is just a telltale of a volar plate injury. Well, you don't necessarily splint a PIP joint sprain if there's no fracture and the joint is well reduced. You can easily move them, maybe buddy tape them. And this one also, you don't really need to immobilize them. I'll even let this person go back to play basketball as soon as they think they can catch a ball. Once it doesn't hurt so much to catch a ball, I tell them to buddy tape it and go back to play. So this is a very stable injury, probably one of the more common things you guys see in the ER, and many times this is actually somewhat mistreated just from being put in a splint and they don't go see someone soon enough or get moved soon enough. So the finger could look very similar and have this x-ray. Now this is a very dramatic difference, right? But there's still a volar plate fragment. The volar plate attaches this fragment. Then there's the central impacted fragment. And then we even have this V sign we saw before where the whole middle phalanx is dorsally subluxed. So as you can imagine, this is a dramatically different injury than the volar plate avulsion fracture or even the soft tissue dorsal dislocation that was purely ligamentous. So this is a very common injury, and this is one that really needs often some sort of thoughtful treatment, I should say. It doesn't always need surgical treatment, but I'll take you through this. So here is the classification. So the if we break up 100% of the this is the middle phalanx on your right. And we say 100%, that little volar plate avulsion fracture was on the bottom, that would always be less than 10% if it's just a volar plate avulsion. Whereas anything less than 30% of the articular surface, any fractures in here that are less than 30% of the articular surface is very stable, and you could treat those fairly aggressively with movement, maybe a dorsal block splint with some flexion if they're hurting, but this one shouldn't be put in extension for sure, and if anything, you want to get them flexing, and maybe a dorsal block splint. But so we'll go through this. So this is a common injury pattern. It's called a volar base of P2 fracture with dorsal subluxation. So again, we have a fracture of the volar base. This is 30% maybe, and we have that V sign dorsally. There's not a concentric reduction between the head of the proximal phalanx and the base of the middle phalanx. And then our treatment here is going to be putting them into varying degrees of flexion to see when we actually get a concentric reduction. When the V sign goes away, then we know the joint is reduced. The problem is, we'll go up to 60 degrees. That's what we kind of think is a reasonable number. Going to 90 degrees, you'll be able to get a lot of these in, but they're not going to stay. If they have to stay in 90 degrees and they can only go from 90 to 120, that's not a good look. So they're going to need surgery. But if we can put them in 60 degrees of flexion and you reduce that V sign, we put them in a dorsal block splint and get them moving, you may avoid surgery with this patient. The last thing you want to do is just put this one in extension and send them to your orthopedist, because the reality is if it takes a week or two to get in, and then it's really impossible for us to reduce this thing in the office. This has to go to the operating room. If it comes to our office a week or two later and it's still that left slide, the patient has to have surgery. We can't really reduce this thing. It hurts too much. Even when you numb it up in the office, it's just not going to work. So this is a good one to be treated in the ER with a reduction, that dorsal to volar translation, and rotating the finger down, putting a dorsal block splint on, getting a good lateral and seeing if they're reduced, and then letting them move or not move, but getting them in within a week to see your hand surgeon. And now if they if they're still subluxed, despite putting them in at least 60 degrees of flexion, we'll put them in a dorsal block pin. That keeps them a bit flexed, allows them to move with the pin in, and it allows them to kind of recontour the joint, heal the fracture, and still maintain motion. The biggest problem with finger injuries, as I'm sure we've all had finger injuries, right, is a minor injury to a finger can result in a long-term, many months of just pain, stiffness, swelling. And so when you have this sort of injury, the sooner you can get them moving, the more likely they're going to be happy 2 months later. Sometimes we'll go in there and fix the volar base of P2 bone just to get it to, get the concentric reduction, get them moving early. Now, this is a very different injury. This, and just to point out, now we still have the volar base fracture. This was 30%, but then the middle part's fractured, the dorsal plaque's fractured, and then there's nothing that at the base of P2 that's still attached to the middle phalanx, and so we would call this a pilon fracture, very similar to the tibia, a pilon fracture. And so this is a very unstable injury. They end up very stiff, and actually our treatment is usually putting them some sort of contraption to get them moving while the bones are knitting together. So, if this comes into your ER, as long as the bones are in the same field, you could just splint this and send it to somebody to be seen within a week. Like, this should be treated fairly acutely, because the more that scar sets up, putting in these traction devices, it's harder to get it to the joint to move appropriately. So this sometimes we do this completely indirectly. We don't sometimes open the fracture at all. We put them in this funny traction device that has gum bands on it from kids' braces, and it keeps traction on it. I think I have a picture of it. Yeah. So you can see this. So like we'll put these gum bands on it. There's two sets of K wires, and they have you do this so that when the gum bands pull, it actually pulls traction on the fracture or on the joint and keeps the bones distracted so that they're not collapsing, and then you can still move the joint. So it's a very unique sort of problem that gets a very unique treatment. Even in 2022, we still do this sort of X-Fix immediate motion traction device. And you can see here, this is what that looked like. This is what it looked like initially, and if you can kind of keep them moving, they actually get good motion back, and they'll actually consolidate pretty well. So this is we'll go through some fractures now. PIP, another PIP joint injury. This is a unicondylar fracture, as you can imagine, very unstable, oblique fracture. No matter what you do to reduce this, it's going to probably fall back into a deviated position. And so this one almost always needs surgery. I think it's appropriate. You could easily just put this in an aluminum splint and send it to someone's office for fixation. So if they're completely non-displaced, which every once in a while you'll see, I got to follow these every week to make sure they don't fall off. But any amount of displacement, we immediately do surgery in this, because any sort of buddy taping, splinting, casting is not going to hold this. So let's talk about MP dislocation. So the anatomy is the same that I showed you, the collateral ligaments, the accessory, and I'll show you pictures here. So here's your two different types of dorsal MP dislocations, right? And you got the simple, which are the more dramatically looking, and then you got the complex, which are the ones that you look at the hand, it's just swollen, the finger doesn't look too bad. Those are the more complicated ones, and they often have a more difficult reduction. But so this is the issue. When they're just really hyperextended, the volar plate is still kind of just in the right position, whereas when they're they've kind of gone past that, and they hyperextended, then they kind of flex back into over the head, and the proximal phalanx is sitting on the head of the metacarpal. That volar plate got trapped in there, and so it's really hard to, it can be hard to reduce this. So I think that it's reasonable to do one attempt at a reduction. You're going to kind of hyperextend it and do that dorsal to volar translation and rotation without traction, and see if you can get it reduced. But you want to kind of hyperextend, you know, accentuate the deformity, which I think, you know, is sometimes people don't love doing to make something worse, you know, but it was way worse when that person dislocated it. You're just putting it back where it actually was at one point, and then you're kind of trying to reduce it back. And so these are very stable. Once you do get it reduced, the simple and the complex ones are very stable once you get them reduced. And so they as long as you can get them reduced, then we don't need surgery. But to get the reduction, sometimes they need surgery. So hyperextension, trying to get that volar plate out of the way, and then the dorsal to volar translation and rotation. And then so last injuries of the MP joints. And you know, we talked about the fact that you can go side to side with your MP joints is a unique feature of your MP joints that your PIP joints don't have. And so in order to, you know, so if you get an X-ray and someone, they have a swollen MP joint, and you know, they don't have a fracture, then obviously they must have a collateral ligament injury. And the way you test a collateral ligament is you got to put them actually into flexion, and then you put a radial or ulnar stress on that joint. So if you try to check someone's ligament in extension, they're going to move back and forth, right? So, and the patient's going to complain and everything. But if you put them into flexion, try on yourself, it barely moves left to right, you know? And if it's ruptured, you'll be able to push it all the way over and all the way back. And so that's a diagnosis that's often kind of, people just don't think about, but the treatment is very simple. We'll put them in an MP extension splint because that keeps the ligament not under tension, and for 6 weeks, and it heals fine. This is actually the splint I used on my hand when I ruptured my ulnar collateral ligament, and I could actually take my pinky and point it 90 degrees the other way, and I can't tell what, I don't even remember which one it was. It healed fine. Here we finally have a skier's injury. So gamekeeper's thumb or skier's thumb, you know, it's a rupture. Usually the ulnar collateral ligament or thumb stick out. It's just asking for an injury, right? You fall and bam, it takes the load. Definitely want to get an X-ray to check for a fracture or subluxation. My son had this injury. He had a fracture with it skiing. The classic, how do you examine an MP joint? Because the MP joint of the thumb is very stable in extension. Interestingly, you got to actually flex it slightly, 30 degrees, to unlock that accessory collateral ligament so you can really check the proper collateral ligaments. So you actually put an MP joint of the thumb in slight amount of flexion, unlock the accessory collateral ligament. Because in extension, you can see here, it's under tight, the accessory, but when you put them into flexion, the proper collateral ligaments is under tension. And so the main thing is if they have a full rupture, they can get what's called a stenner lesion, where, you know, the thumb is basically, it was pulled so far away, when it recoils, there's a tendon that gets in the way, and that's why we often fix gamekeeper's thumb, because you can see down here, see the ligament's supposed to be under your adductor pollicis. When it recoils, sometimes collateral ligament is sitting above the extensor, and then that should be surgically fixed. Let's see, I'm at the end of my time, so I'm just going to pass through fractures. Obviously, digital malalignment is often what we use to whether a finger needs to be reduced or not, and or whether it needs surgery following the reduction. Mallet fingers, you guys see a lot. I just want to cover one more injury that I think is an unusual injury that you guys will see. Here, I'll just tell you that for mallet fingers, anytime you see blood under the epinicular fold there, get an X-ray, especially in the pediatric population, make sure there's not a fracture there. And then we splint mallet fingers for 6 weeks in extension. Don't let them move it. Don't tell them to take it off for bathing. They got to keep it on for bathing. Don't let them move it for 6 weeks. That's the main thing. You guys are on the front lines of this. The more you can tell them that, the better chance they got to not have an extensor lag. Oh, yeah. So this is the last injury, DIP dislocations. Very uncommon, but you're going to see them once in a while. Same sort of issue. The volar plate is disrupted. It's a very stable joint. So when this dislocates, you got to look for a little fracture in there. That's going to implicate instability. It's often missed. The finger doesn't look bad, actually, until you really get a good lateral. And this one should be put in a dorsal block splint in flexion. So probably the final analysis of our talk today, you know, most times put most fingers in flexion that are ligament or injuries, except for that volar dislocation of the PIP joint. That's the one that goes in extension for 6 weeks. All right. Well, thanks.